This Do Lectures episode features Director of Business Consultancy Standing on Giants, Robbie Hearn, recorded live at the global event in Cardigan, West Wales in 2016.
I'm Robbie and this is my monkey, and we'll come back to him later. I'm just going to try and find a space for him to sit. So it's really, really good to be here. I'd like to thank Naomi in particular, who's been a real calming influence for me in the last 2 days, because I've had a very hectic week and I wasn't sure if I was going to make it, but I'm so pleased that I'm here. So I've got a few things to talk to you about in terms of what I've been doing for the last few years in telco, and particularly with communities and what that means. But because this is the Do Lectures, I'm also going to talk a bit more than I usually do about me and how I've done those things, because I really like the idea of encouragement and sharing stuff, and I'm really pleased to get the opportunity to do some of that with you. So the talk, I was thinking of a name for the talk, and I just picked these two words, respect and connect, because I love language and they kind of rhyme, but they really mean something to me. So these are the words, these are the concepts that really get me out of bed in the morning. So regardless of what I'm doing, I really believe in respect, in the respect that exists between two people no matter where they are. And I really think that the ability of people to connect with each other is one of our most precious possessions as a human race, and something that's only going to become more powerful for us as we move into the 21st century. I think of the 21st century as the human century. Even though there's a lot of talk about technology, I think ultimately it's the fundamental things that make us human and that power human connections, which are going to be much more important than technology in the long run. So they're the two words that I put up there because they're the things that, you know, fuel my energy and keep me going. And sometimes we all need that. We all need to remember what's important to us. Now, the other thing I love is words. And I learned a new word today, actually. I was familiar with the concept, but I was looking it up. And I found this word, stilliferous. Does anybody know what stilliferous means? Wow, okay, that's brilliant, because talks are brilliant and inspiration is brilliant, but I think if you can at least learn one practical thing, you know, that you didn't know before, my time is not entirely wasted. So stilliferous means having or an abundance of stars. Having or an abundance of stars. I just love that word, right? And what I didn't know was that stilliferous is also one of the eras of the universe. So when you think about the entire history of the universe, the longest possible time frame that humans can possibly imagine, the universe splits into five eras. And we are living now in the second era. The first era was called the primordial era, from the Big Bang. 14 million years later, we've just started the stilliferous era. I didn't know that, you know? I didn't know that the universe was so incredibly young. And the stilliferous era started 150 million years after the Big Bang, but it will go for 100 trillion years. 100 trillion years. It's an unimaginable time frame. And we're just at the start of it. 14 billion years is just at the start. But that is the period of the whole cycle of the universe, stilliferous. That's the period when stars are born and stars die. And at 100 trillion years in the future, there'll be no more stars. There'll be no more new stars. But the universe will continue for three more incredibly long epochs until the stars gradually diminish and die and turn into black holes and fade away. And eventually, an unimaginable time in the future, there'll be nothing left, just protons slowly decaying. And when you think about that, if you try and think about that incredible timeline, it just makes me feel like so incredibly privileged to be alive right now, because there's such a short period in that entire time frame of the universe when we can even be alive. You know, we have to be in the stilliferous era, and we have to be on a planet that supports life, and we have to have gone through 5 billion years of evolution. So stilliferous is a word that I'm going to remember, because whenever I get annoyed with somebody, if somebody's doing my head in, I'm going to think to myself, stilliferous, stilliferous. Because that word is going to remind me that that person, even if I'm annoyed with them, that person is also an incredibly amazing kind of entity in the universe. And it's incredibly privileged position that we're in, that we can be here today in this farm in Wales within that enormous time frame of the universe. And that's the kind of thing that I mean when I talk about respect. I think, how can you not respect another human when we're all such amazingly unique and unusual entities in the universe? And that picture, by the way, probably you have seen that before, even if you haven't heard the word stilliferous. So that's the famous blue marble picture taken from Apollo 17 in 1973, which really changed the way that human beings thought about themselves. So that's stilliferous and the universe and everything else. And this is a bunch of people seven, eight years ago. So that's me looking slightly younger under the G of GIFGAF. And this is the startup team for that enterprise. And what we were all about in 2009 was trying to do telecoms differently. So I'd worked in telecoms for about 10 years by then, and I'd got very jaded with it, because the telecoms industry, like a lot of big businesses, doesn't treat people like people, doesn't treat customers like people. It just treats customers like numbers and sources of revenue. And even within telco, there was an acknowledgement of that, which is, you know, a credit to them. And what we were trying to do here was to redress that, to kind of create a telecoms company that put customers at the center of the business in a real way, not just as a marketing slogan. So I joined as a startup team. This is a few months before we launched, and you can see, you know, there's a lot of happy faces there because it was a fantastic project. And I worked on that project for the next 3 years. And that's the first time that we came across communities, because the way that we put the customer at the center of the business was to build a place online and invite people to come there. And that's what we called our community. And community since then, or you know, maybe even at the time, has come to mean 100 different things. But when I say community, I really mean a deep type of community, a community that instills those virtues of respect and connectedness. And this is a relationship map from the GIFGAF community, actually. And I've taken out the details for privacy purposes, but each box represents a person, a real customer in the GIFGAF community. And the lines represent their relationships with each other, how they're connected. And the reason we could build a map like that is because we took the time to really understand those people as people. And that is what made the difference to that company in the end. You know, the fact that we didn't treat them like numbers or sources of revenue, we actually got to know them, their names, their jobs, their struggles, their joys, and we built these pictures up over a long time. You know, the GIFGAF community is 7 years old now. And some of these people have been there from the start. And we've been there through them with the community managers in the team. You know, some of them have been sick. We sent them flowers. We've met them. We know their kids' names. Some of them have got married. Some of them have had horrendous arguments. You know, they've forgotten to be stilliferous. They've got annoyed with each other and caused arguments. But that's all part of life. And that really is the difference, what's on the screen there, you know, between just saying something and actually doing it. You know, to actually do something is a lot harder than just saying it. And the communities we build at GIFGAF, and since for other companies, that's why they work. You know, and they really did work at GIFGAF. And I must remember that this slide will take a bit longer to go. But you know, 3 or 4 years later, the company was really flying in the telco space. So a lot of these MVNOs, these virtual networks, came and went really quickly, and GIFGAF hung around. And it was very commercially successful. But what I really love on that slide behind me is that we had the highest customer satisfaction of any telco in the UK and the highest net promoter score. So on the one hand, we were taking cost out of the business. But on the other hand, we were actually delivering a so much better experience because we properly respected the customers and we really listened to what they said. They got involved in every aspect of the business, from delivering SIMs to creating marketing to answering questions. And some of them would spend up to 10 hours a day on our online community, hanging out, meeting each other, doing things at 3 o'clock in the morning to help somebody who was having a problem with an iPhone. We also had a guy called Andy Zero at the time, who was an ex-network engineer. And he used to spend his weekends driving up and down the M4 with three phones. So he was measuring the mobile signal and then telling our network engineers where there were problems with the network. You know? So they would do all these kinds of crazy things that we never imagined. They used to write our apps for us. The first iPhone app for GIFGAF was written by a customer. Everything, right? And all because we treated them with respect. So coming out of GIFGAF, you know, I was still really energized by that whole experience. And I just loved the sense of what was possible for a brand and for a company when you started to trust people, when you started to give them respect and you started to connect with them in a meaningful way rather than just see them at the end of a TV ad or a marketing campaign. And so I pitched the board of Telefonica that we could set up a separate company to do the same thing, but not just in telecoms. And we called that company Standing on Giants. And the reason I picked the name Standing on Giants, because I had two choices at the time. It turned out that Telefonica, as an enormous corporation, had people who did everything. And it turned out there was a guy who just did names of companies. And he said, well, you've got two choices, Robbie. You can either pick a name like Blueville or something meaningless because it will be good for SEO, or you can pick a name that has a narrative that has some meaning to it. And it didn't take me long to decide because, as you can see, I love words, I love stories, I love meaning. So picked Standing on Giants because it came from the famous quote by Sir Isaac Newton, who, when he was asked towards the end of his life how he'd achieved so much, he didn't say, well, just because I'm a bloody genius. He said, it's because if I've seen further, it's because of standing on the shoulders of giants. He said it in kind of older English than that, but you know, the sense of it is really clear that he fundamentally acknowledged the power of a collective, you know, of all the people who'd come before him, and he wasn't just taking credit himself. And that's really at the heart of what I want to do with companies through communities. So the company that I set up with Vincent Boone, who is the person standing next to me in the GIFGAF picture, is called Standing on Giants. And what we're all about is the enduring importance of human relationships. You know, whether that's in our company or the communities we create or the supplier relationships we have or the clients that we deal with. That's what I think is the key. And all of those things, they're all connections and they all have to have that same flavor of respect running through them. Standing on Giants, you know, has been really successful. We've done loads of things. And the most impressive thing or most thing that makes me proud of is the most recent thing is that Vincent and I have recently organized a management buyout of Standing on Giants. So within a couple of weeks, we will be the independent owners of Standing on Giants. So rather than being an intrapreneur, I'll be a fully-fledged entrepreneur in a couple of weeks if everything goes to plan. And that's been an incredible, intense journey. And but we're really, really excited about the future because, you know, we've out-competed a lot of bigger companies to win big clients already, clients like Airbnb. And we've got loads more exciting people in the pipeline. We're also working with not-for-profits, and we've got conversations going with a couple of local councils because this type of engagement model can work, you know, I think, all over the place, you know. There's so many areas of our life where public trust has gone down and where the balance needs to be redressed, where those connections need to be made again. You know, we were talking about housing maybe earlier and council services. But wherever you look, you know, the trust as in the public for everything has just gone down and down and down and down. And I think by reinstilling those virtues of connection and respect, we can rebuild that trust and we can achieve much better results right across the board in all aspects of society. So that's me, and that's what I've done so far, and that's where my talks, you know, would normally kind of stop. But I thought for this audience and for myself, really, really interesting to talk to you a bit more about me and how I came to be doing this rather than something else. So we saw earlier a very grand picture of the Earth from space, and I've taken the same attitude to captioning here. So this is the desk rather than the Earth, and it's taken from my phone sitting on my bed a few days ago. And why I wanted to put this up here is that, you know, I think that it's so important when you think about doing something that you don't get carried away by all the things that could get in your way, and that, you know, you think that everything has to be perfect. I know I used to think like that at different points in my life. Whereas the reality is that if you have the curiosity and the belief and the determination, you can make anything happen, you know, and you really don't need everything to be perfect. So this essentially was my office for the last 3 months while I was doing the MBO. And it's far from ideal, you know. And I didn't tidy it up for this picture. And you can see my wife's hairbrush and thing on there, and the TV screen where my son plays PlayStation. And I'm not the most organized person, so there's bills and things on there. And there's also a couple of things, like the little Tintin figures, that are just there to, you know, remind me of why I'm doing what I'm doing. That spirit of adventure that I love from the Tintin stories. Every time I get a bit down, I just look at those little figures. And I achieved so much on that desk, and I didn't need a big office. I didn't even need the office that I had before we had our second child. You know, with the curiosity and the belief, the world around you can just become so much more manageable. Another thing that can really hold us all back is doubt and fear. And this picture is the Woolwich Arsenal about 100 years ago. And anyone who doesn't know, the Woolwich Arsenal was like Europe's biggest munitions factory. It employed 80,000 people at the time of the First World War. And what I didn't know until recently is that on my dad's side, four generations of my dad's family worked in this factory as manual labourers. And I didn't know that in particular, but what I did know was that I was working class, and I didn't have an example in my family of someone who'd ever done what I was trying to do. And there were times when I, for sure, felt like this wasn't for me and I couldn't do it and I wouldn't have the whatever it took to do something like that. So fears and doubts always creep in. And even when I looked at my skills and talents, again, there was a nagging voice in my head saying, you haven't got the skills to do this. You know, you can't do this. This is a test that I did not so long ago called the Gallup Strength Finder, and it's a great test, right? And I felt very good when I got these five things coming out. Until I learned that there's buckets for these strengths and skills, right? There's four buckets. And all my skills were in one bucket, you know? So where I was feeling very kind of proud of myself for having those skills, I suddenly thought, my God, I'm completely unbalanced here, you know? There's no way I can do what I want to do if all my skills are in this one thing called strategic thinking. And then what I've managed to do is find ways to get over those things, right? To get past those doubts, to use the people around me. I had a coach last year, and this is a visioning exercise that she got me to do. And we don't have time to go into all of it. But what it really helped me, and what I love about it, is the fact that it's there constantly present. It's on the wall by my desk, you know? And whenever I get down, I just need to look at what's in the middle of that diagram. And that centers me and reminds me why I'm doing what I'm doing and why I'm going to get through whatever challenge I'm facing. And these are the key people that helped me, a team that I built around myself, that Vincent and I put together to help us take Standing on Giants to the next level. And with curiosity, you can learn that, you know, you might not be able to do everything, but you can fill those gaps in a number of ways, and you can find people who do have the things you lack. And the quote at the bottom, nothing is created without the support of others, especially anything that moves the heart and educates the soul, is what I think about every time I think about not being able to do something. I think, well, there are people out there who can help me. There's people I know who can do these things. And this is almost the last slide, so I'm almost on time, you see, which is amazing. So I'm a structured kind of analytical thinker, and I tried to put what I've just told you into something that you could use or I could think about later. So it might not be perfect now, but I know the theme for your week is curiosity, and I loved that theme when I heard about it from Naomi, because I've always been curious. It's a natural thing that did come to me, and why I looked into the universe and why I found out that the universe had five ages and we were in the stelliferous era. But I think curiosity is easy when it's about the world. It's a bit harder when it's about other people, because we're so sure of ourselves and we're so brilliant. And it's very, very hard to have real curiosity about yourself. But the value, I think, comes from the harder things. You know, every time you're confronted with a problem you can't help, you can't solve, curiosity rather than fear about that situation is what will move you forward. And learning how to use other people can't begin until you've had proper curiosity about yourself. And that, I think, is genuinely the hardest thing of all, but the most rewarding and the most productive. And when you get that curiosity going and you learn things, it really clarifies your belief. And that shapes your goals. And that gives you, in my experience anyway, the motivation you need to fulfill things. Because getting anything done is bloody hard, you know. The world is a place that doesn't want things to happen. You know, the stelliferous era will end and we'll go into the dark ages and all the protons will decay, entropy is the nature of the world. So to make anything happen, you really have to have all these three things. And it all starts with curiosity, curiosity about the self. The last thing is coming back to the monkey almost on time. So there's a concept that you may be familiar with from Buddhism about the chattering monkey. And the chattering monkey is something that we all have, no matter how confident we appear on the outside or no matter how much we've achieved. It's just this intrinsic part of being human. The chattering monkey is what the Buddhist sages or masters, whatever you call them, used to capture the essence of that voice in your head that's always saying, you can't do this, you can't do that, distracting you from things, chattering away. And the secret, apparently, is not to pretend you don't have the monkey. You know, you can't get rid of the monkey. The secret is to embrace the monkey, to listen but not believe what the monkey's saying. And I really like that idea, because I've had a huge amount of problems with my monkey in the past, but he's here, and now we're friends, and I'm really pleased that he's here, but I don't believe what he says. So thank you. Thank you, everybody.
The Do Lectures is here to share stories of remarkable people in the hope they will inspire you to go and do amazing things too. There are over 300 talks to listen to, or if you prefer, watch on our website, thedolectures.com. Hit the subscribe button on your favourite podcast platform to get the latest episodes when they come out.